The time is 6:44 a.m., Monday, November 18th, in the room Golden Horn. We will begin the fellowship morning meeting in about 15 minutes.
Good morning.
Bonjour.
Thank you, Leanna. Now let's try everybody else joining Leanna. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Much better. Okay, so in Durban, Adrian sat next to me on a regular basis, and I had to keep taking his computer and putting it down, and putting it down, and putting it down. I can see it's going to be a repeat today. No. And now you're trying to feed me fat food. No.
Sweet.
No.
Bahrain is sweet. It's called halwa.
That's a hell of a sweet. No.
Are you just positive?
Sure, don't worry, Ollie. I'm not trying to run a session or anything. You just do whatever you like. Really, the room is yours. It's all good. We have a sign-in sheet passing around, if you would, please, just to check yourself in and to check me out to see if I remember who everybody is at the end. Olivier should be joining us this morning. I'm not sure where he is yet, but we have a couple different things to talk about. The very first is that at the far left of me, we have Sebastian Bachelet, one of the ICANN board members who is an extreme supporter of the fellowship program, so therefore the ICANN hat already on today. So, Sebastian, did you want to say hello?
Yes, thank you very much. Merci beaucoup. You need to speak in English, or you have the booth here, then you can. I am comfortable in French. I am comfortable in English. But you see, that's interesting. It's exactly why I'm here. Je suis là pour vous montrer.
I'm here to show you. That you all had to make a little bit of an effort.
That you must all make an effort. I'm going to speak Spanish. We are here in Argentina. Of course, my first language is French. The language we speak here is English. And more than anything, English, 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 English. I'm going to take down your name, your mother language, my language is not the one most widely used here. This is to tell you that we must all make efforts speaking, those who are not native in English and those who are whose English is his first language, because those who speak English every day, as their mother language, they must make an effort to reduce the level, the speed of their speech, and pick words that can be understood by everybody. So the demonstration I'm trying to make here is that if you pick another language, you understand you must make an effort. So if English is your language, you must make an effort too.
My name is Sébastien Bachelet. I'm a member of the board. I was elected 3 years ago by at-large. Olivier Crépin Leblond is the president of at-large. Is at the head of at large, and this is a very dynamic part of ICANN, a very interesting part of ICANN called at large. But my message, and I'm going to repeat myself, I'm sure, during this week, is to find your place in ICANN, participate, become engaged, participate remotely, participate by coming here during the meetings, participate to all the meetings remotely. We need you. I hope you're going to need us a little bit more. And that together, we're going to be able to have ICANN move up to the next step. You're going to see that you're going to have some very nice speakers that are going to come talk to you about ICANN. ICANN is a beautiful organization, and you're very lucky. You are very lucky. I'm going to give you a secret now. You have the best facilitator you can find. Don't tell her. She's going to blush. But she's a great facilitator. Be nice with her. And you're going to see that she can open all the doors for you. She's wonderful. Enjoy your program. Do not hesitate to stop me in the hall when you see me. Ask me questions. Come talk to me. Be very open. Many people are very busy. They go from one meeting to the other. Maybe they have no time. But I can promise you that I will stop, greet you, and answer your questions. Have a great week. This is lots of work. This is very intense, very busy, but you're going to love it. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you so much. Since you have the group here, and since we do not have Olivier, if you would like to suggest anything about At Large, I would like to open the floor for you to do that as well.
I can try to do that. I came unprepared, but and Olivier will arrive soon, I am sure. At Large, first of all, At Large was built. ICANN get through a reform in 2003, who led to the creation of At Large, because before, there were something also called At Large, and it was direct election by the world, by end user register in each region to elect a board member. And it was the only thing they were supposed to do, and then they elect five, one per region, At Large director in 2000. But it was not working well. For many reasons, and I don't want to spend time on that, but just to tell you that our history came from this elections. And then we build up within ICANN a quite complex organization with at-large structure, who are local, national organization, like consumer organization, like free software organization like Isaac Chapter, like Internauta in this part of the world, and so on and so forth. The only thing that those organizations must have is represent end user. And if you represent end user, at least in one part of your activity, your organization can become an at-large structure. All the at-large structure in one region, in ICANN there is five regions, join together, and they are creating what we call a regional at-large organization. Then you have five. Here it's LAC, Latin American and Caribbean regional at-large organization, and you have the four other. I belong to Euralo. I was chair of ISOC French chapter, Internet Society French chapter. I participate to the creation of Euralo, European Regional at Large Organization, and in 2007 we finally create at large ILAC, the RALO and ILAC. ILAC, it's just, but it's important, the committee who runs the at large. And it's 15 member, three per region. And the big difference with the previous situation where we were able to elect directly is that today there is an organization who are able to build on policy issue, to build on topics they want to talk about, they can react to what GNSO, CCNSO, ISO. I am sure that I don't know which level you know about those acronyms, but I will not spend time to explain them because during this week you will get all that. But that's a supporting organization. Or they have discussion with the GAC. All that was not possible when it was direct election. Now it's possible because we have a very in-depth, organized structure from the bottom to the ALAC, and ALAC is supposed to be an advisor committee to the board. Then when they write something and it's an advice, they send that to the board directly, and the board must take that into account. I guess that's the structural part. The topic they are talking about, it's the same that almost everyone here. The big difference, I will say, with the other organization is that they care really about everything within ICANN. They have no boundaries. If there is something happening in one part of ICANN, another part of ICANN, and at any topic they can and they are really keen to handle. All the other organizations are quite focused. The GNSO, it's about the generic top-level domain. The CC, it's about the CCNSO. It's about the CC, the country code domain names. The ISO, it's about the address space. The closer organization at the level of the topic is the GAC. The GAC could handle everything. But you will see that finally, they take just one part, who is public policy, more than anything else. It was interesting to see the evolution. The GAC at the beginning were just interesting in what's happened at the CC level. And little by little, they start to talk about GTLD, and now it's eventually the biggest part of their preoccupation. I remember in 2003, 2004, the secretariat of the GAC was by some friends of the European Union, and I tell them, but why you don't care about the GTLD? One day you will have to. And they told me, but we don't care because this is a space already. It's a space, a definite space, and we have no problem with that. It was a time where ICANN introduce new GTLD in 2000 and 2004, and I was very surprised by this answer, and I told him, you know, maybe today it's your feeling, but just be prepared, because the next round will be a huge interest for you. And I was not so wrong. Now they just talk about that. I will stop here. I was not really prepared, as I told you, and I am available to answer any of your questions. If they are not too tough this morning, it's Monday, please. Okay, if they are tough, I will try to. Your turn, Anis.
And we've also had Olivier, who snuck in behind you here. He was being a filler, and he was doing an excellent. No seven. We do have to consider we have Tony Holmes here with us, ready for his slot, just right after you. So we may have to condense you just a little bit. Fantastic.
By the time you get ready, maybe they have one or two questions I can answer if they want.
Certainly can.
So how does an individual become a part of the ALAC community?
He will answer to that.
Okay.
He will tell you everything, and he will make sign you at the end of the
session. Has Sebastian told you what an at-large structure is? Yes.
Because this is the basic thing. Okay. So, all right. So I'm Olivier Krapanov. I'm the chair of the Outlier Advisory Committee. I'm sorry to be late. I thought I was actually starting at 7:30. We usually have breakfast before and then... But anyway, okay, basically, an at-large structure is any kind of organization that deals with end users. So it could be an ISOC chapter, it could be an organization that deals with bringing computing facilities to deprived communities in all around the world, basically. So it could be in developing countries or developed countries, it could be dealing with indigenous communities, and it could be dealing with senior citizens. But what's important is that it deals with end users. Some are for-profit, some are not for-profit, so it's not purely civil society. Now, in order to be able to be a member, in two of the five regions of ICANN, you're able to go and become a member as an individual member. In North America and in Europe, there is the possibility to join an individual member's group. In the other three regions, you need to go via an at-large structure. So you can go on the at-large website and you can find out what organization is already an at-large structure and you can join them. The other thing that you can do, of course, is to create your own at-large structure. If you're, or if you have created your own at-large, well, your own organization that deals with end users and are already member of an organization that deals with end users, then you can actually get it to join at-large and to apply as an at-large structure. The form is on the website. There are a number, of course, of minimum requirements that you need to be an at-large structure. There needs to be a structure as such, etc., website, and a number of things. And then the application process takes about two months, I would say. Due diligence gets performed, etc., etc. But that said, you don't need to be part of an at-large structure or an at-large structure to take part in at-large. Did that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, that did make sense. So anyone, you know, our meetings, our discussions, the work that we do in working groups, that is open for everyone to attend and to take part in. The only thing that an at-large structure gets that individuals who are not part of an at-large structure don't get is the ability to vote if there are any elections or selections or if there is anything that requires a vote as such. But as far as input is concerned, all of our meetings are open and everyone is very much welcome to attend and to bring their input. In fact, they're encouraged to do so. That was a bit of a long answer, but I think I've kind of circled every single aspect of it, if possible.
And the interpreters are still there, so they have survived.
We'll wait 5 minutes for them to finish the sentence.
I'm still catching my breath. Are there any other questions for Olivier? Let's just go this way. Please.
Yes. My question is, how does the at-large...
And let me just stop 1 second and remind you, your name?
My name is Martin. Sorry. My question is, how does the at-large groups work in the regional way? Do they meet? Do they vote? How do they decide the topics they vote on? What's the... structure of the elections and that things.
Okay, so my presentation was supposed to deal with this. For some reason, it's not really going to deal with this at the moment. So effectively, the way that it works is that the world is in five regions. So we've got North America, Latin America, Europe, Africa, and Asia, Australasia, and Pacific Islands. Each one has got a regional at-large structure that is there with a leadership that is there to coordinate the region. Now, the way we work is bottom-up. So if an individual at-large structure has a concern or looks at a specific subject and says, well, we need to be dealing with this, then the conversation would start at RALO level, so at the regional at-large organization level. The discussions would effectively take place on the mailing lists because every region has got a mailing list. And then from that point onwards, it might be that the region might wish to coordinate with the other regions as well and try and find out if there is the same concern in the other regions. If there is the same concern, I would say in at least two or three other regions around the world, and often there is because issues of domain names are always worldwide. You have to remember, we're bound by the remit of ICANN. Domain names, numbers, internet identifiers, this only. These are usually worldwide problems. If at that point it's echoed around the world, this reaches very quickly, can reach the ALAC, the At-Large Advisory Committee, which is the 15-member committee that sits, if you want, across the world. So three members from each region. And then that gets taken then into the ALAC's processes. I don't know whether Sebastian told you the difference between ALAC and At-Large. At-Large is the community. ALAC is the committee of 15 members that the community selects and puts there. From each region, two people are selected by the regional at-large organization itself. One person is selected by the nominating committee, which you'll hear about at some point. But that actually provides us with a very balanced committee, both geographically balanced, of course, since there's only three from each region, but also gender balanced and also skills balanced, since we have the nominating committee that can look at the unbalance, if there is one, on the committee to start with.
And we're going to take one more question, and then we're going to move on to Tony. And what? Oh, gosh. You were next in line.
Thank you, Olivier. Actually, I have two quick questions. The first one, what is the difference between a supporting organization and an advisory group, and why some structures that seem to be to have more grassroots representation, such as the At-Large that works directly with the community and the GAC that are the elected governments, why are they advisory committees are not supporting organization per se? And do you have a PDP, a process for developing process in at large, such as the supporting organizations?
Yes, we do. And if I wasn't so disorganized and didn't arrive late, I would have had slides, which, of course, for some reason, my machine doesn't work. So two questions. The first one, the difference between supporting organizations and advisory committees. The supporting organizations develop the actual policy themselves. The advisory committees do exactly what is said in their name. They wait for the policy to be developed or get involved as a guest, if you want, in those committees. And then they will comment on it. The At-Large Advisory Committee is able to comment on everything and anything that is ICANN related. So we don't only comment on policy development, but we can comment on the structure of ICANN, on external matters relating to ICANN, on things relating to the GNSO, CCNSO, to any part of ICANN. For example, recently we have had a comment or statement which was drafted in favor of the Montevideo initiative that Fadi and the board proceeded forward with. So the advisory committees are somehow a little bit less constrained by the ability of what they can do. The supporting organizations have a very defined mission, which is to provide policy development for the organization. So they're not going to start dabbling with what goes on outside of their strict mandate and the work that they do. As far as the policy development process is concerned in at large, yes, we have that as well. I'm taking a bit of breath so the interpreters can have some breath as well. And then what happens is that the way that it works is bottom-up, fully bottom-up for us. So one of the main things that we do is to respond to public comment requests. Now, when there is a public comment request, and I'm not sure whether you've already gone through this, but there is a web page which says public comment on the ICANN website, and all of the different parts of ICANN can ask for the community, for people to send in their public comments. What happens is we first put it on our own wiki, which is our own website. We put the public comment request, the documents, etc. And then there is a discussion with an at-large as to who is going to hold the pen. And usually there is a volunteer because we're dividing in working groups. So immediately there would be a working group or someone leading a working group that would say, yeah, no problem, I'll pick up the pen on this. I'll be the pen holder. After, I would say, 2 to 3 days of discussions, a first draft would be put together. That's put on the wiki. And then it's open for comments within our community. So there's a first round of comments where people are able to comment on it by just typing whatever comments they have, amendments, things they want to change in the actual statement itself. A second that goes on for about 5-6 days. A second version then gets put together. Sometimes even a third version gets put together, and this is where we start taking a bit of time, especially with a larger, you know, the longer statements which are more complicated, where we might not have full consensus. There might be two points of views which are not completely aligned with each other, or more than two points of views which are not completely aligned. If we cannot find consensus, we don't come up with a statement. And I don't even say, oh, this statement, this possible statement is ready for a vote. Because every single text that comes out of at-large gets ratified by the 15-member at-large advisory committee. And I don't think that it's worth, if you have 9 votes for and the rest of it being as abstentions or being against, you know, going just beyond the 50% mark is not something that I like, because ultimately it means that 50% of our community is unhappy with a statement. So really, we can't really say there could have just been one person changing their vote and the statement would have not gone through. Usually we need to find consensus by the second draft or sometimes the third draft, and then it will be presented to the ALAC, and the ALAC will hold a 5-day online vote, or if we are here face-to-face, we will conduct a vote face-to-face. Every vote is open, in other words, transparent. So in other words, everybody knows who's voted for what. The only votes which are by secret ballot is when we vote about people, because in general, if you vote against someone, they're not very happy about it. So it's just a way to kind of keep harmony in the organization. But all of the other votes are absolutely transparent. The only constraints we have is that from the beginning of the process to the end of the process, we have 21 days. Because that's the initial comment period, and that's why you'll see I'm constantly sweating and running around and things, because there's not very much time to go on with that. We often have to provide our statements in the second half of the public comment period, so during the second batch of 21 days, because we just could not manage to do it in the first batch. But there is a process and several stages where one is able to comment and is able to say, hang on, I don't agree with this, or is able to support what's being drafted and saying, yes, I like that. Pen holder doesn't need to be just one person. It sometimes is 2, 3, sometimes 5 people. When we deal with long statements, it's good to be able to share the load. And people being able to comment, you don't need to be an at-large structure to comment. Anyone is able to comment. So that's the bottom line.
That was quick and that was full. Olivia, thank you so much. And I know you're feeling really constrained, but I do want to try to keep the time this morning. Now, the at-large is having sessions all week, and everyone is welcome.
Right, and this is the room. So you can't say you can't find the room, because that's in this. As you will notice, it looks like the Starship Enterprise, so the ceiling at least. So this is where we meet, and Tuesday is our big working day. So you're very welcome to come here. The rest of the week, we're sort of running around. But Tuesday is the day when we spend most of the time here. Of course, it's all written on the schedule, so you're very welcome to take part.
And a reminder, we have several of the alumni from the fellowship program who are key members of the at-large, so you can mentor up with them coming here to a meeting. If it gets to be a little overwhelming, you just find one of the alumni from the fellowship program. Ali is here by my side, Sarah Noosh, Liana, and they will help you through the process. Thank you so very much.
I recognize quite a few people here, which is really, really great, always.
Thank you again so very much. And Tony, if you'd like. So it is kind of a assembly line feel sometimes here with the fellowship program, as we try to work with a schedule that we're given in order to provide you an opportunity to hear from the chairs of each of the different ICANN community groups. So Tony Harris is here as the chair of the Internet Service Provider, which is underneath the generic name supporting organization, the GNSO, in the non-contracted parties. So that just gives a little bit of reference to what we had talked about yesterday and to bring you into where we are. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Tion. Good morning, everybody. It's a privilege to be here and speak with you. I'm not sure which other groups you have heard from in the commercial stakeholder group, but I chair the Internet Service Provider and Connectivity Providers Group, and we sit within the commercial stakeholder group. We are the providers of the infrastructure parts of the internet that don't have a contractual relationship with ICANN. So although some of our ISP members may also offer registrar services in certain parts of the world, we clearly normally do not have that linkage back in with ICANN. So we sit within the commercial stakeholder group along with the business constituency and the intellectual property constituency. And some of our larger members, they could just as well sit within those groups as well, because they run businesses, they have an interest in intellectual property. But our focus tends to be more on the technical aspects of the internet and the impact on security and stability of the internet, very much focused towards those issues. Our members are very used to taking part in a bottom-up process, because one of the things that we really have an interest in, of course, as ISPs, is internet addresses. And if we didn't have internet addresses, then we wouldn't have any businesses, we wouldn't have any customers. So from our perspective, that's a very important element, as well as the domain name issues as well. We certainly focus down on the impact of some of the decisions made in ICANN and how that impacts the network capabilities. One of the things we're very interested in at the moment, and you've probably heard quite a lot about, if you haven't, you will whilst you're here, is an issue of name collisions, where the new GTLDs may be in conflict with some internal names that have been used in the internet for a number of years. So that has an impact on our networks, and it has an impact on us directly, because when things don't work in the internet, the first port of call for customers is normally ISPs. It's our phones that ring, and we're expected to fix things. We can't always do that, but we do need to be very aware of what's happening and to be able to help our customers through those difficult times. Another instance of that was when we first started creating longer character domain names. There were issues there where suddenly people who wanted to access those domain names found they couldn't. And at one stage, ISPs were blamed for that capability not working, and we were actually accused of blocking in the network. So we had to reach out to our members across the globe and to try and understand what was happening. The root cause of that wasn't anything ISPs were doing. It was the fact that the software capabilities that were required to resolve those names in a lot of cases wasn't there. But it was still important for us to engage in that dialogue, because, as I said, when things don't work, we're expected to know what happens. So that is really a focus for our members. There isn't a generic description of an ISP. Other than we provide that linkage between the customer and the network, the actual model that's in place does vary across the world. So we look to reach out not only to large ISPs, and by that you can include telcos, the big telco companies. I actually represent BT here, so I come from that area. But also we have to make sure that in the dialogue that's taking place in ICANN, the smaller ISPs are represented as well. So that the small guys working in parts of the world that can't engage directly in ICANN by coming to the meetings, we have to make sure we have a channel through to them. And we work very closely with the ISPAs across the world to make sure that what happens in ICANN they are aware of. We seek their views, and we do work by consensus. So we have a lot of engagement in the working groups within the GNSO. We're also engaged in the GNSO Council, where along with the other constituencies, we have two representatives on the GNSO Council. So at this stage, can I ask, is anybody here closely associated with an ISP at all?
Yeah.
Ah, excellent. Well, I'm going to make a pitch similar to Olivier and suggest that instead of going to the at-large meeting, you come and join us at our ISP meeting, which is tomorrow afternoon. You'd be very welcome. And we are currently undertaking a lot of outreach activities because with the expansion of the namespace, it's really important for all ISPs that they really understand what's happening here. And they're not all in a position where they can actually come to ICANN unless it happens in their region. And the size of our meetings tends to vary according to where ICANN pitches up. In some parts of the world, we've been very successful in pulling in local ISPs from that region of the world, and we'll have quite a large meeting. In other parts of the world, we aren't so successful, so our meetings will shrink down to those ISPs who actually attend ICANN meetings. So it's very hard for us sometimes to actually judge the requirements at an ICANN meeting. I'm sure here, from what I know of the layout, there won't be any problems, but we have had ICANN meetings in the past in various parts of the world where it's been standing room only. And that's excellent. I mean, there is nothing wrong with that, providing everyone can put up with that type of environment. It's a great opportunity for us to get that level of engagement that we really seek. So I'm going to stop here and pause for questions. I would certainly love to see some of you come along and join us tomorrow. It's a very active day for the ISPs tomorrow, as well as the actual constituency meeting. We're involved in the commercial stakeholder group, along with the business constituency and the intellectual property constituency, where we tend to discuss some things together. We don't always have the same views, but that's healthy in itself, that we have that level of debate. So a very active day, I think, for all of us tomorrow, and welcome to join us. So happy to take any questions.
You know, I'm just going to jump in here and say that I think one of the things and the reason we ask the chairs from the different community groups to come is that there are certain groups like the at-large that seem sexier than others only because they, right, I mean, it's kind of that name that gets out there that says anybody around the table, you know, has the voice and coming from any place, and if your fingers touch the keys, then you're part of our group. And I think we tend to forget that all of the community here are talking about the same topics, perhaps from a different view. So you have to consider, and I really stress this with everyone, you have to consider listening to different views. I think Sebastian said it in a different way this morning. He's talking about language and culture, and I think we're talking about here also our hot topics and what it is that ICANN's mandate is asking us to look at. What is important to your region? It's very easy, and this is not something to pull back from at large at all. It's not my job to push you or pull you to one direction or the other, but to facilitate your ride during this week and to have you take a look at what it is that you need, not where everyone else is traveling to. So think about your region. Think about the needs of your region. What are the challenges that you have? And Constituency Day is that day that you can go around and listen to the conversations. And I strongly suggest looking at the Community Wiki and looking at the ICANN website under groups where you find our multi-stakeholder model and can dig in to the different stakeholder groups and constituencies and really look at how they're addressing the topics. And if that makes sense for you, sometimes the largest and the most filled room is not the room where your voice is heard. Sometimes it's good to sit at a table where you have people that are really looking at something from a different point of view. An example I have is we have two young ladies who joined ICANN through fellowship in Cartagena. They're lawyers. They're in the business constituency. Why? Because they felt like that was a place they really could hear themselves speak, they could really get their message heard, and they could learn. That's what I heard from both of them. You can learn. So you have to just take a look at what suits you. again, like in deference to Olivier, I'm not trying to put anybody one place or the other. I'm just suggesting you open yourself up to look at what's important for your region and for you.
Yes, I totally agree with that. The strength of ICANN is getting those diverse views coming in so that what comes out at the end is something that everyone's had an input to. I think that's incredibly important. I would also just make you aware that as far as the ISPs are concerned, we also provide information on important topics to a broader base than just our membership. So for some ISPs who aren't members that, for various reasons, haven't joined our constituency, we certainly maintain a channel with those different organisations so that when really important things occur that impact ISPs directly, we keep them informed. If they want to join in the debate and provide input to the constituency, then they're welcome to become members. But there is this need that we need to make sure that they are aware of some of the developments here that really impact their businesses, that impact their customers, just so they know what's happening. So I would encourage all of you who are ISPs to actually provide us with your details. We can add you to that list. I hope that through that level of awareness that we will provide for you, you get a thirst to become members and join, and you'd be very, very welcome to do that.
I'm Philip Johnson from Afralo. I come from a region in Africa that has several ISPs, perhaps, except my country, three ISPs. They are competing. It's a business. Now, as an internet user, I want to see access, some universal access. How can I get ISPs in my area cooperating and also working along with your constituency? Well, do you have a criteria for ISP to become member, or can they become member individually or through incorporating with one another?
The answer to that is both. We have organizations that represent groups of ISPs who are members through that capability, and they can also join themselves. I'm a great believer in competition in providing benefits to users and would always encourage that. One of the things that most of us as ISPs find is that there are various times when we work quite closely with our governments as well to facilitate that. Sometimes it's at our behest, we want to talk with them. Other times they want to talk with us, because obviously what happens at the ISP level really does impact consumers at the end, and they're very keen normally to provide the right basis so that the market grows. And if we're not meeting their concerns, they're normally very quick to come along and speak with us. So most of us do have a fairly close linkage with governments. I'd be very keen to speak with you offline and to see how we can actually help that happen. We could also maybe provide some dialogue with you as to how other parts of the world have grown their base as well, and provided that additional access that is so badly required. Thank you for your question.
Hi, my name is Vivek Goyal. I'm from India. Do you also provide regularly a kind of best practices for up and new coming ISPs? So besides complying to what their region or their government wants, they can look at the international and use that?
We provide that type of information normally when we have requests on specific issues, which we will address through that. One of the things that we've been able to do recently that we've never really had the capability to provide before is a series of newsletters that we're starting to issue, or bulletins, as we call them, from the ISPCP. And within that, we tend to focus on issues that concern all of ISPs. recently it's been focused a lot towards the issues of internet governance and how that specifically relates to ISPs. But if there are best practice issues, then certainly within our membership, we normally have the capability to provide some help on that basis. So once again, the invitation is there.
Yes, I'm Martin again. My question is this. Some people say that ISP concentration makes sometimes monopoly and market practices. That usually leads to higher prices, less quality, less access. Other people say that, on the other way, that concentration is good since the nature of the economy of an ISP is usually a scale economy. Does the constituency concerns there is diversity, does it concerns there is competition, or it just receives everyone and doesn't care if they're more controller, more diverse?
Well, I agree with you totally that you have to be very careful that you don't get into that situation where, because of the market conditions, then consumers suffer at the end of the day, and competition is certainly always very healthy. We're not in a position where we can actually do any more than provide examples of what has come out as best practice that facilitates the right approach. And we are more than willing to have a dialogue on some of those issues, but of course we can't influence the local situation. All we can actually do is point to things that we think have worked, practices and structures that have worked, that have encouraged the growth of the industry in the right way. The dialogue that normally has to happen is in the country where that's happening. And certainly there have been, I think, a lot of instances where we've engaged, not as a constituency, but as individual members in other organisations, such as the IGF, where we've tried to promote that best practice approach. So again, we can probably help in terms of providing the background of good examples, but the actual implementation has to come back at the national level, which is outside of our remit.
Hi, my name is Marília. Yesterday we heard a very interesting presentation about the importance of IPv6, and at the end of the meeting that we had yesterday to celebrate the 15th anniversary of ICANN, Vinserv said, call your ISPs and make sure that you demand IPv6 implementation. So I'd like to know, what are the policies that you are developing and how us as users could help you? Is this the right stressing point to ask you for IPv6 implementation?
That's a really great question, and it's something that's close to my heart. And I would say that the message you were given yesterday is exactly the right message, because in some parts of the world where IPv6 has taken off, it's taken off because it's had a little bit of a nudge along in terms of incentives from governments, not monetary incentives, but the type of thing that's really helped implement IPv6 is where big contracts, certainly big government contracts, have said as part of that contract you need to be IPv6 compliant. If we want to provide IPv6, you have to be able to do it. That's been a real stimulus. In the part of the world that I come from, that stimulus hasn't been there, and I'm very dismayed to say that IPv6 is still quite a low level. So as soon as ISPs get customers saying, come on, we need IPv6, they're going to start thinking about it in a different way. It really is a good message. As far as our members are concerned, they've certainly been involved in all of the discussions in the regional internet registries across the globe, so they've had a hand in defining those policies. And I believe that we're at the stage where they have to move. Some people are reluctant to move because it's very difficult as an ISP to go into your board of directors and say, we need to move from IPv4 to IPv6, because the first thing they say is, what is that going to cost? And, okay, we're now going to invest this money. What do we actually get for that? And you say, well, we have to move to the new protocol. It does provide the additional address space, But in some situations, until it gets to a very dire situation that those ISPs can't do business because there is no IPv4 address capability there, then they're reluctant to make that step. There's also a first mover disadvantage in this case. A lot of ISPs are sitting waiting for somebody to go first, and then they'll follow. And something needs to happen to promote that. So the situation varies across the world. In some parts of the world, it's been very successful. In other parts of the world, they've got a lot of catching up to do. The benefits are for all of us, particularly when we look at some of the new capabilities that have got to be met. The Internet of Things is going to obviously acquire a lot of IPv6 addresses and various other initiatives. One of the things I'm rather dismayed about at the moment is in some parts of the world, I now see the development of practices that expand the life of IPv4, put in carrier-grade network address translators in. It prolongs the life of IPv4. I think that's the wrong way to go. And again, that's a dialogue that I'm aware of is taking place with governments as well, who are looking at some countries or their own countries and saying, why isn't the growth in IPv6 happening? So that dialogue is actually happening. But please, as users, if you can start saying, we need to have IPv6, and that will generate the content on IPv6 as well. So at the moment, a lot of the content that you access on the internet is only available via IPv4. Once that initial start has happened, then the content will be there on IPv6 and it becomes self-generating. So it was a great message yesterday. I was very pleased to hear that.
And just on time, Elise is just arriving in the room, aren't you? Good. We'll take one more question.
Yeah, this is Ahmed from Pakistan. My question is, can a regulator be part of the group? Because it's very important for the regulator to know the issues of the ISPs to facilitate them.
Well, the straight answer to that is no. Under our terms and conditions, you have to qualify as an ISP or a connectivity provider. But there is a need to have that dialogue, and I mentioned that we tend to work quite closely with governments because of that. Always keen to speak with government people. We have a lot of conversations with our own GAC members about issues that concern ISPs, infrastructure issues and other issues. So we do have some links back with ISPs around the world in a lot of countries now. If we can help provide them with information that then they can have that dialogue directly with their governments, that would be fine. If their governments want to come along and speak with the ISP and get some views of what's happening in other regions of the world, very keen to help with that as well. But they can't become members themselves.
Well, I want to thank you so very much. And again, as Tony said, sessions tomorrow, both from the ISP standpoint and from the commercial stakeholder group standpoint, to come and get engaged with. Now you know Tony's face, so if you go into the room and you'd like to get maybe paired up with someone there so you can better understand the topics, please avail yourself of him. I'm sure he'll be thrilled.
So you're very welcome. So please come and join us, or if you want to catch me in the hallway, that's fine as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Elise. I'm here. I changed my hair, changed the color, changed the style. Hard to find in the crowd. So Olivier is going to have to go. He just wanted to say that he's going to pass me a slide set with some more information about At Large, and I'll get that passed out to all of you perfectly. So I'm glad you came, since I put BA in fellowship. I was so used to putting Buenos Aires instead of BC for the business constituency, but that hopefully went right by you in the email. But good morning and welcome.
Oh, well, thank you. So my name is Elisa Cooper, and I am the chair of the business constituency here at I'm from Mark Monitor. I am on autopilot, too. The company I work for is Mark Monitor, but I represent our constituency, which is the business constituency. And we really have three different areas which we focus on. We want to ensure that policy is developed that is ensuring that the internet is secure, that it is a safe place for businesses to conduct transactions with their customers, and that there is freedom of choice in the marketplace. And so all of the policy that we're developing or assisting in developing is really focused on those three different areas. But before I talk a little bit more about the business constituency, I thought it might be interesting just to share my story about how I became involved at ICANN. So I've actually been following ICANN probably for the last 6 or 7 years, and there were a couple of years there at the beginning where I was not attending at all. I was primarily following what was going on the website. I was following when the comments were being published. I was reading all of the different reports, and I was still able to, with my company, I was submitting comments on those reports. And if you're not able to attend meetings, using the ICANN website as a resource to understand what is going on, what they're focusing on, and then commenting on those reports which are being published is a very good way to be engaged and to have your voice heard. Now, the benefit of joining a constituency group or some other group here at ICANN is that, frankly, ICANN can be a place filled with a lot of different acronyms. It took me many, many years to become, and I learn new things every single day. I still am learning about different areas, different pieces of policy. It's quite a broad subject. But when you're participating with a constituency, one of the benefits is that you're able to tackle all of those reports and everything that's being published by ICANN, because you can kind of spread the work required, and you'll get people in the constituency that are more expert in one area. And so they'll take on the onus of helping to lead a discussion or helping to prepare those comments. But at any rate, I was really participating from afar. But then when new GTLDs came along, I said, oh, no, I kind of want to be more engaged, and I really want to understand, you know, where this is going. And it's taken many, many years. It's been well over 5.5 years since the real kind of work started on the new GTLD program. But that's definitely one of the areas, for instance, that the business constituency has been following very closely. So we've been commenting on and following closely all of the different kinds of protections that are out there for business to protect themselves as these new GTLD registries are launching, because there's a grave concern that as these new registries are launching, that businesses are going to be forced to buy the domains to protect themselves, and that others will come along and squat on the names or use the names in a way that is obviously not desired by business. So at any rate, as I mentioned, joining a constituency gives you that opportunity to be part of a group to help kind of navigate. And that's one of the things in the business constituency that I really aim for us to do, is to sort of navigate this very complex, often confusing landscape, and to do it together, and then to rely on others within the constituency that are more expert in particular areas. So what can I answer for you about ICANN or the business constituency? I will just say, ICANN can be a very kind of confusing, complex place to start. There are many acronyms. This place loves acronyms like you wouldn't believe. And that in and of itself can be confusing. Please don't be afraid to ask somebody to say, what are you what is that acronym? Just ask them. They'll be more than happy to do it. A lot of times people at this point, they just talk in acronyms and, you know, oh, I'm going to go talk to somebody on the GNSO and we're going to discuss, you know, the SSEC 056 and, like, just ask them, who are you talking to and what are you talking about? And they'll explain to you. I'm going to go to the talk to somebody on the generic name supporting organization council, and we're going to talk about a recent report that has to do with security. At any rate, so let me stop here and ask what kinds of questions I might be able to answer for you about either the business constituency or my experiences at ICANN.
Hi, I'm Vivek. What is the process of joining a business constituency? Do you join as an independent business, or do you have to represent a group of businesses? What is the criteria?
So we have three different membership types. We have kind of a micro enterprise, so very small business. We've got a lot of people that are part of the constituency, which are very small businesses, maybe just themselves, a consultant, or a couple of other people. Then we have another kind of membership, which is a membership for companies that are like membership organized companies themselves, so like the Better Business Bureau or those kinds of companies who are representing many other companies. And then we've got another membership type for larger businesses that would be businesses that span at least two geographical regions.
But I think, and this is Janice for the record, I should follow my own advice. And at large, you can come in as an end user, and certainly being part of a structure is a better way to have a stronger voice. In the business constituency, as an individual, is there an opening for an individual?
You really need to be a business. So to be a member, so you should be a business that is serving users on the internet. So if you are a business, if you are a consultant, if you are organized, you are serving the needs of end users, then you would be eligible. Now, all that said, our meetings on Tuesday, on Constituency Day, all the meetings on Tuesday are open meetings, and you are more than welcome, and we would love to have you there, love to see you there. Come join us. Those meetings are always open to the public.
And we also have at the ICANN booth information about at-large. We have information about the business constituency. They actually put out a wonderful newsletter that's very informative, and it's available in several languages at the ICANN booth. So that can help you along as well. You know, thank you. There's one right here. The other resources we have, again, we point up to the multi-stakeholder model, where you can dig into that just a little bit to see what work the business constituency is doing. The same as we talked about with the internet service provider. So many of the community groups, most of the community groups, are working on the same topics but from a different viewpoint. So, again, you just have to think, you know, what is my need? What is my region's need? What is my company's need, my organization's need? You know, so what is the constituency or stakeholder group that's going to serve those needs? And Tuesday is an excellent day to do that tasting and step outside of what you think is the safe, normal place to land and start to listen to how others are approaching a topic or approaching a subject. You might be very surprised. For those who are up to multitasking, you can join in the Adobe Connect room to one meeting while you're sitting in another. But be prepared. You know, a lot of you have gone to internet conferences around the world multiple times over. So I know you're very aware of your head buzzing. But it is a lot to take in on a day that's already one that people are talking about topics that have been talked about for a long time. So it is very difficult to do. But it is another option if you feel like you can kind of monitor one and be in another to try to get that tasting in. But again, as I said with Tony, walk into the room. look around. You don't see a face of one of the alumni or someone. Go up to Elisa because she'll be able to put you in contact with someone around the table who could walk you through the session and help you keep you updated.
Absolutely.
Hi. It's more like a general question about how the GNSO works, because from an outsider perspective, probably is the most diverse group of people. So what is the opportunity that you have to meet with other houses and with the non-commercial interests or the contracted bodies? What is the point that everything comes together to form GNSO policy?
Well, the council is kind of that place where we all come together. I'm not sure if you've gone over the two houses, the contracted parties house, and that. So, this is one of those things that took me a long time to actually. People talked about it a lot, and I've seen it on paper a lot. But let me see if I can explain it. There are two houses. There's the contracted parties house and the non-contracted parties house. The contracted parties are the registries and registrars. So those are the contracted parties, and they call them that because they are the ones that actually have a contract with ICANN. So that's the contracted parties house. Then you've got the non-contracted parties house. And within that house, we're split up between the commercial stakeholders group and the non-commercial stakeholders group. In the commercial stakeholders group, we're further broken down. So Tony Holmes, who is in here, he is with the ISPs. So in the commercial stakeholders group, it's made up of the ISPs, the business constituency, and the intellectual property constituency. And frankly, the business constituency and the intellectual property constituency, we often are very closely aligned. And we're often aligned with the ISPs, but more so with the intellectual property constituency, the IPC. So then on the other side, you've got the non-commercial stakeholders group. And they are representing, there's also within that group, there's the nonprofits, and then the non-commercial stakeholders. So these are people that are participating, that would be from universities, that sort of thing. We are not aligned with them. Unlike the contracted parties, because we often see, from our side of the house, we often see the contracted parties sort of having a common goal, because they're both here to sell domain names. So at any rate, the GNSO council, so that's how we're sort of organized. Now, the council itself, so then you've got this other group, the council, the GNSO council. So one point that can be kind of confusing is that you'll hear people talk about the GNSO, and sometimes they mean the GNSO council, and sometimes they're just talking about the GNSO, which is the two houses. Now, the council has representatives from both houses, and also has representatives that are put on there by nominating committee. And that's where the policy is developed, actually. And so everybody, the groups are, we're all feeding information. So the way it's supposed to work is that those counselors that are on the GNSO Council, that's the generic name supporting organization council, that's has membership from both houses, they have members coming from both houses, and they are to represent the viewpoints of the different stakeholder groups. So they participate on a council. They're there to really try to develop policy, and that's a very lengthy process in and of itself, which can take well over a year, 2 years, to actually develop some new policy. So that's how it works in a nutshell, if that even made sense. But I think important thing to know is that there are these many different groups, and they are participating on a council, and everybody is going to that council. Those representatives on that council are supposed to be representing the viewpoints of the different stakeholder groups.
Yeah. My name is Yusuf. I'd like to know if one can join more than one group.
That's a very interesting question. Yes. So, for instance, I am kind of an anomaly myself because Mark Monitor is actually also a registrar. So, I have a colleague who participates with the registrar's constituency over in the contracted party's house, and I am in the non-contracted party's house participating with the business constituency. This is a point of discussion right now. There is a lot of discussion about what is going to happen because also there are many new GTLD applicants who are really businesses. They're not really as applicants looking to be running a registry as a business. You know, their core business is not to be a registry. They've applied because they want to have a brand name. So there's a lot of discussion about, well, how's the structure going to change in the future? Because it used to be very cut and dry. If you were a business, you're in the business constituency. And if you're a registrar, you're in a registrar constituency. But what happens if you're a registry who's just doing it because you want to have your brand name? That's, you're not really in the business to be a registry and make money at it. So to answer your question, you can, but be in multiple stakeholder groups. But, for instance, I don't vote in my constituency. My colleague votes in his constituency. So in terms of voting as a member on officers and other issues, I don't vote. And I let my colleague have a vote in his constituency. Now, that was a long answer, but a very good question and a very tough question, actually.
Beautiful. Yeah, I was actually going to mention something about that when Philip had stepped up and said, I'm from Afrelo and was asking questions for the internet service provider. And I think, Olivia, you've probably run into this before too, and it's something I forget to bring up actually about having a foot in the door in several different community groups here in ICANN. So anything's possible, but there are rules to follow in order to do that.
Yes, and I would say there is a wall between my colleague and myself where he does not share with me information that is sort of proprietary, and that is, you know, things that are confidential. He does not share everything with me, nor do I. But it is interesting to have different perspectives.
Okay, one more. Go ahead.
I'm wondering, so where does companies like Google and Microsoft, where do they fit in this structure?
So Google is actually a business constituency member. Microsoft is not. They participate in the IPC, actually. Microsoft is in the IPC. Now, but you're right. They have both applied to become registries, so it will be interesting to see whether or not they somehow participate or want to participate over in the registry stakeholder group. Good questions.
I know. I like that this time on a Monday morning. We're actually all with it. Well, thank you very much, Elisa, as always.
Oh, my pleasure.
Again, we've heard from three different groups this morning, so you've got a lot to think about for tomorrow. And certainly, just because we couldn't fit everyone in today doesn't mean that there aren't other community groups that are looking for you as well. So come to myself, come to Ali as one of our alumni. We have lots of folks around the table, actually, to talk about before tomorrow to see where you might want to land. And yesterday there was a comment that said, stick with it for a little bit. And I thought that was a very good comment to make. You know, walking in and hearing about 5 minutes of conversation is not going to give you any insight into that group. You've got to really think about it, talk it up with your peers, find some of our chairs and their folks in the hallways, talk about it today, and make a good decision based on what you know. It may not be the right one that day, but it's one that you make based on everything you know, and stick with it for a little bit. At the break time in the morning, step up to someone who is up at the table at the microphone and say, I'm trying to be part of this. I got a little confused.
I notice that you're at the microphone a lot. Is there a way that I could sit next to you or someone else you could suggest so that I could try to catch up for the rest of the morning? And then if it really hasn't hit you at that point in the day, sure, please go try something else. What I don't want, and this is the Mama J coming out, what I don't want is someone out wandering in Buenos Aires. That's not why you're here. If you're having a problem making it stick, you come back and talk to me or Ali or one of our other alumni here, and we will help you get through, because tomorrow is a difficult day. When you aren't belonging yet, it really can be a difficult day. But you're here to stick with it and to learn about it and to try to understand what it is that we do. So always come back to the home base to figure out where to go next. And the ICANN booth, where we have the alumni and staff right there all day long to help you. Thank you so much.
If you feel lost, always come back to this room.
I'll give that plug for Olivier. If you feel lost, you can always come back to At Large. I will give you that this morning. And we can go ahead and stop record. And now I'm going to go off the record.